Do you like books? I mean, really, really like books? Then you're in the right place. Each week, your host, Sam Hankin, interviews the best of today's top-selling authors and the up-and-coming superstars of modern literature. This is The Avid Reader. Here is your host, Sam Hankin.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Avid Reader. Today, our guest is Jamie Attenberg, author of All Grown Up, published just yesterday by Houghton Mifflin. Jamie's debut collection of stories was Instant Love, published back in 2006. And then her novels The Kept Man and The Melting Season appeared thereafter. Her bestseller, The Middlesteins, appeared in 2012. And her latest work before All Grown Up is St. Maisie. She's written for The New York Times Magazine, The Wall Street Journal, The Guardian, among others. All Grown Up tells the continuing saga of Andrea, 40 years old, single, child-free, also a frequent, sometimes itinerant, drug user and alcohol abuser. The problem is, amongst others, is she's not grown up. She has no engagement, no husband, no baby, no house. So it's up to her and her poor therapist to try to figure out exactly what's going on. So the upshot is that the book resonates, as does Andrea's situation, and evokes the same feelings in me now as it would have done 40 years ago. What do I want to be when I grow up? Part of us wants to kick Andrea in the ass and tell her to just get over it, move on. And the other part wants to say, come on, take it easy. It'll all work out. Just enjoy what you have and look forward to the future. It's a situation, as I say, that we've all found ourselves in. The book, because it's so good, helps you either relive and you, or less fortunately, remember and get a lump in your stomach and realize you're right where she is now. So you either relive what you felt a long time ago or you go, oh, this is exactly where I'm stuck right now. Anyway, welcome, Jamie, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. Thank you. It's such a Rorschach test, this book. It's so funny that you say it. You're either coming at it like glad that that moment in your life has passed, or you're feeling like you're just in that same exact moment she's in now. And when I talk to people, it's really interesting to see where they come from and how they react to it.
Well, yeah, you're like punching some readers in the stomach, you know?
I guess so. I don't think her life's that bad, but...
Well, so what the hell is wrong with her anyway? Let's start there.
I just think that she's definitely got her flaws, but she's got her strengths too. But she does like to drink, and she kind of never really figured out exactly what her path was. I think the biggest regret that she has in her life is that she was once an artist and then she stopped being an artist.
I agree.
And she really misses that. Yeah, she really misses that, and I think that's like the biggest hole in her life. But I think that she lives in a society that makes her feel like she has all these other holes in her life, which aren't accurate. So like all the traditional milestones, as you mentioned, of like getting married and having kids and like none of that stuff is really interesting to her.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Art's what's interesting.
Yeah, and it's the way you set up the book too. Like in the first chapter, you know, when she has her little apartment, but she has her big window and she can see the tiny little Empire State Building, and every day she draws it, and then you kind of shut that out for her, and it kind of sets the book up really well because she knows it wasn't, you know, a masterpiece, but she knows this is what she liked to do. And she did it every day, and then she was stopped from doing it. It's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny though. It's the reason I know it's a good book is because I can remember people's names. Whenever I remember the names of characters, I know it's a good book. Like Matthew and Baron and Sigrid and Andrea and Indigo, and those names stick with me. So I know that the book must have meant something to me. So I remember
that's great.
The party back when she's going to her friend's wedding, when she's sitting with that guy Warren. And, you know, he's newly divorced and doesn't know what to do. A nice guy, but she's ready to go home with him and have some recreational sex and just, you know, tries to explain, hey, it's no big deal. We can make it easy. It's no problem. And he, you know, gets his back up and says, you know, what kind of person do you think I am? And she says to him, you know, Warren, I'm sorry. You are old after all. I kind of didn't like her then, but I kind of understood her. But, you know, I'm old, too, so it's like I'm thinking, you know, well, you know, she really shouldn't be doing that. I mean, shouldn't you have some type of feeling towards somebody before you suggest or, and then I realize I'm being chauvinistic because a guy would do that in a minute, right?
I mean, I can't, I can't be inside your head. So I don't know. It's like there's not really, like, I think in this book everybody's kind of right and everybody's wrong at the same time.
Yeah.
And there's a lot, you know, like there's just all, I feel like in every chapter there's like a bunch of different, or, you know, a bunch of different possible emotions that you could have within it. And so, I mean, I just think that she felt in that moment, I think she just felt rejected. And so she needed to turn it back on him and reject him back. But he was judgmental of her. And, you know, so like, again, like he kind of didn't treat her right, but maybe she didn't treat him right either. But like they were all, they're just sort of responding to each other and being really incredibly raw and human. And those are the things that happen probably after you've been drinking all night at a wedding.
Yeah, and the thing about it is what's good about another one of the good things in the book is that none of these people that you portray, whether it's her mom or whether it's Matthew or whether it's her brother, none of them are bad or good. They just have the qualities that all of us human beings have. And you just, as you said, you can't get inside my mind, so I'm going to come at them with a bias. And I did in this specific instance.
You sound like a very nice man.
Thank you.
I don't know. There's really like this book, like there's, I was just thinking about this the other day, that there's really like no way, to, you know, there's no way, but just to sort of push through it. Like it's life, right? You don't get to always be right. You don't know, you know, and you screw up sometimes and you don't, you know, you just don't always know what the right answer is. And I think she genuinely thought in that moment that she was, you know, doing, you know, offering him up something lovely and wonderful.
Yeah. Well, the way she put her hand on his arm, you know, it was a nice touch, and it wasn't meant in like a prurient type way. And
it was just about him and where he was. It didn't have anything to do with her. It had to do with him and where he was at.
But you do put the reader in these spots, which is always good, because then, you know, it's not just reading a book and then putting it down. It's thinking about it afterwards, like with Indigo. You know, you have these shades, pardon the pun, of Schadenfreude throughout the whole book, where Indigo, her best friend who marries the richest guy in the world and is beautiful and does yoga and wears these flowing diaphanous gowns that never seem to end, and has her baby and this enormous breast that's there for the baby. But then, you know, she's not really happy for Indigo. She's really upset. She's losing somebody because of the damn baby and the husband. And these are feelings that people have, but they don't often express them. And so,
no.
So I think what you're doing again is, you know, you're making the reader say, you know, do I feel this way? Would I feel this way if this happened to my friend?
It really depends. Again, like I've had friends read it who are single and like they've read it and just been like, oh my God, you actually wrote this book about me. And then I've had friends who are married and have children who are just like, I feel that, who feel judged by this book. I actually have married friends with children who feel judged by this book.
I can see their position clearly. I mean, yeah, because you don't come at this like whimsically. I mean, the book is hilarious and it's really funny, but you don't come at the topic whimsically. Just for example, if you look at the fact that, you know, and I'm telling you, you should be selling the books and I'm telling the story for you, so I apologize for that.
But no, it's okay.
But so like, you know, her brother and sister-in-law have this baby that's got, and you know, it's in all the reviews, so I'm not spoiling anything, that, you know, has a horrible disease and a horrible prognosis, but she doesn't seem to have that much empathy. Maybe at a certain point, maybe. But she doesn't seem to have that much empathy. And then that, again, that's when I was kind of thinking, well, I really don't like her but then I was thinking, you know, would I want to be that, when I want to go to New Hampshire and visit, you know, all that kind of stuff.
It's really hard. I mean, people do it all the time, right? Like,
yeah.
They, like perfectly fine, sane, normal people who are, you know, donate money to charity and hold the doors open for other people and are, you know, well-behaved in the universe, check out of their family life. They just do it. And, like, it just happens all the time because they can't deal with it, or it's just a raw wound, or they don't know how to be the person that they're supposed to be in that moment, and they check out, and they don't do it necessarily in a cruel way, but they do it, but it's hurtful nonetheless. I don't know. I kind of just think whenever you wake up is when you wake up, right? Like, whenever you decide whenever you figure out how to be a better person or the person you're supposed to be, or a grown up, as it were, is when you figure it out. And, like, I think people should be allowed to, you know, hopefully it won't take as long as it did with Andrea, but I think that people should be allowed to, there's no right path, you know what I mean? Like, there's no, nobody knows how they're supposed to get there. That's kind of the whole point of the book. And also, the characters, every character in the book is trying to figure out how to be a grown-up. It's not just Andrea. You know, her mother's trying to figure it out. Brother and his wife are trying to figure out. Her best friend's trying to figure it out. Like, they don't, just because you do these things, because you achieve these milestones, doesn't mean that you're suddenly an adult. It just means that you've taken those steps.
Yeah, and her mother is a perfect example because, you know, on a lot of levels you admire her mother, but then when you go into the backstory and all the Saturday night parties, you go back into all the parties that she had and what the guy with the goatee did and all that kind of stuff, and you realize, oh, no, I guess she wasn't the greatest parent at all, and in so many different ways, and wasn't there for Andrea. But you don't really think that when you're in the present with the two of them, and they're just, you know, my mom's 94, I'm Jewish, we have the same kind of relationship exactly. So I'm used to that stand up kind of routine that the two of us have, and that'll go on forever. But there's always a backstory, and
right, because why, you know, when I think about my parents. And my parents are not her parents, and I am not Andrea. But when I think about them, I mean, my mom had me when she was 26 years old, right?
Yeah.
I think she was 26. When I was 26, you know, I was like sitting in, I think I lived in Seattle maybe then, and I was just like kind of like hanging out being a stoner. And if I had had a baby then, I would have no idea how to raise it, you know? Like, no idea how to, like, be... I don't have a baby now either, but, like, I would not have known how to be a grown-up, and I would have had to grow up just incredibly quickly. And there's just no guarantee. And I think that our presumption that our parents have all the answers, always have all the answers, is an incorrect one. Like, they are allowed to make their mistakes, too. In fact, they all do. I would guarantee all parents make mistakes raising their children. It's funny that you say like the comedy routine, because I had like pages and pages of the mother and the daughter, Andrea and her mother, Evelyn, just talking to each other that I never used, but I could just keep writing them forever. Like, I just could put them in any situation now and write a chapter.
I know. It's like my mother. I'm going to take her out to dinner tomorrow night. Where are we going to go? Cracker Barrel, for God's sakes. She wants to go Monday night because it's pork chop night and we're Jewish. She'll say, like, we'll be just having a chat, and she'll say something like, I wonder why you never did anything with your life. And it's like, you know, she just took the knife and shoved it into me. But it's like those kinds of statements will come out of her. And it's like, Mom, geez, you know?
Mom, I have a radio show. Come on. I'm really lucky because my mom never. I really want to write about this, but a lot of the, you know, the early conceit of the story is that, and I don't think I'm giving it away because it's the second chapter of the book. There's a book that comes out.
That's great. Is
about being single, the conceit of my book, All Grown Up, and all these people keep sending it to Andrea. Like, her mom sends her a copy but doesn't say it's from her, so she has no, you know, just this book shows up in the mail, and her sister-in-law mentions it to her, and her coworker gives it to her, and she's just like, I'm already single, like, I don't need a memoir about being single. And I really felt for Andrea in that way, that, like, you know, why is she identified in that way? But my family, they would never do anything like that, and my friends would never do anything like that. No one ever, you know, suggests that to me. But I'm kind of aware of, like, that's, you know, that when people write these books, and they want them to be marketed towards people.
What do you think is going to happen with your book? People are going to be doing that with your book now.
Well, I know. I was about to say, my editor when she read the first draft of the book, she said, the irony of this book is that you wrote a book that people are going to send to their single friends.
Yes.
Even though you're complaining about how atrocious it is that people do that. I will say the one thing that sort of makes it different is that a lot of books that are written about being single are nonfiction books, and there's not a lot of fiction. There's fiction about it, but it's really like how most of those characters are like they don't want to be single anymore, or they're dating, or they're trying to find romance or something like that. And this character is single, and she really has no interest in changing that part of her life. And I hadn't seen that character represented before. And I'd wish that I had, like, I wish that when I was growing up, I had had a book like this, or when I, you know, because I felt, I have certainly have felt like seeing the world around me, you know, culture, movies, books, things like that, where they always want to have that Hollywood ending where, you know, the female protagonist finds somebody to fall in love with. And I thought that's not what this book is about. I don't want that. I want her to figure out how to be happy. I want her to figure out what it is that she loves, not who she loves, but what, you know, what it is that she loves to do and to be. And that was really the most important thing to me. And so if this book gets sent to single people and they feel a little less alone because of it, or inspires them a little bit more just to be the person that they are and not think about themselves, what they're missing out on, because I don't know if they are.
Yeah,
missing out on anything. That would be great anyway. It would be an honor to make single people happy.
Plus, you'll sell some more books. You'll sell a lot more books.
Yeah.
And also, this is like classic book club material because, you know, I have a bookstore and this one book club has 28 people in it now, which is way too many. And of course, they're all women. But this is the kind of book they'll be fighting over the table, you know, about how they feel about Andrea. And those are the ones that
I know.
Are
you... Team Andrea or not? Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly right. It's going to just be like the Hunger Games. It's going to be. It's funny that though too, because, you know, another one of the tricks that you kind of do, and it's not really, I don't mean it as a trick, but I mean if you suppose you send this to someone like Andrea, and there are people like Andrea, there's people like all of us, but when, you know, when she goes to her therapist and it's a frustrating experience for her at best. And she says that one line, which everybody wants to say to the therapist, whose side are you on anyway?
Mm.
And, you know, there's people that line's going to resonate with because they probably said that to their therapist.
Mm.
Not the most productive thing to say to your therapist, not really therapy, but.
Mm. I have not done very much therapy in my life. I've done, you know, like every once in a while I'll go like, I mean, I would say I twice I've gone to, like, engaged with a therapist more than a few times.
Uh-huh.
And maybe like a month or something like that. And so I don't even really know, like, how people talk in therapy. But I figure anyone can say whatever the hell they want.
Right.
In therapy. And I knew how Andrea would talk. I just think that she had, you know, we're sort of looking at her eight years out in therapy, where she's just like, I don't know why I'm still doing this, like, I'm not really getting anything out of this at this point anymore, and really it is time for her to go and kind of fly baby bird, be free, you know. But she, and I think that it is interesting because, like, each character sort of represent, like, the therapist character is and also the mother character for me are like are my way of questioning Andrea. Like, the things that they say to her are like great for me as an author to, like, say, why don't you just, like, get your act together already? Or why don't you just be more honest with yourself, or that kind of thing. So I love the therapist character, and I also wrote more of her too, but I don't know, I didn't, like, I was ready for her to go. I think it's because how I feel about therapy in my life. Like,
Andrea,
I know people love it, but
well, Andrea was happy to get rid of, I mean, Andrea got pleasure out of firing her too. I mean, she was happy to. So it was.
I don't know anyone who's ever sad when they fire their therapist.
That's a good one. I like that.
Yeah.
Tell some of the fun. Tell one of the funny stories is how Andrea gets her chair from her mother. Why don't you tell the story of that? Because it's really funny.
Well, her mother. I think it's like maybe the third chapter of the book. I can't remember. Yeah. I don't want to give too much away.
Okay. You don't have to if you don't want to.
She does have a chair. Basically, she has a chair, and she moves into an apartment. She doesn't have any money, and her mother sends over all this furniture from her house, and it's all, like, just used furniture that's been sitting in her living room forever and ever. And Andrea has the chair forever and ever, and she sort of keeps staring at it and not knowing, you know, why it's so familiar. And then she realizes that it's the chair that her father died in. And she... And then suddenly she just wants that chair out of her house completely. And there was like a funny moment where she calls her brother and her brother's like about the chair. And her brother's just like, well, I said no. Like, I don't know why you said yes to that chair. She's like, I didn't know. I didn't realize what it was. So I mean, that is probably like, to me, it would be like a really creepy thing to have the chair that your father died in.
Especially.
It's an antique.
Well, it's an Eames. Maybe? It's an Eames chair. It's very valuable, except she's doing certain things in it, which, you know, are, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Well, let's not give that. Let's let people discover that part.
Okay. but that was really very fun. Well, let's talk about, so the segue is sex. So you have lots of sex in the book, and she's having sex all the time. The question I had about Andrea is she never seems to have a really, really good orgasm.
Well,
you would think she would, though.
No. All the sex is bad in this book for the most part.
Yeah.
It's like layered with, she has some good sex in the book, but a lot of it's bad. And I usually have good sex in my books, but this time I just felt like, but I don't know. Sometimes I sort of like it if it entertains me, if it's like a bad sex scene, that's sort of so funny and how bad it is. Not meaning like badly written, but just sort of like, oh, this is a terrible and uncomfortable situation. I like find that, you know, entertaining enough that it feels good in its way. And I also don't think she really has that much sex in the book. If you know, I think I think there's really only like three or four.
Yeah, that's true. You're right.
Sex scenes. It's just that it's a really short book. So per capita, maybe it's a lot of sex. But I wanted to really explain, like, kind of how, like, a single person, or at least this character, felt about it, where if you're not in a committed relationship, sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad. And even if you're in a committed relationship, obviously it can be really terrible as well. But I just wanted to like sort of show what it's like out there, or what it can be like there out there. I keep saying about this book that I just really wanted to tell the truth, even though it's totally made up. And I think we were talking earlier about the, how it's not nonfiction versus fiction, how there's a lot of nonfiction out there that's about being single. But I think that when you write the story as a fictional character, like it sort of gives it a truth or a life that that it might not have in nonfiction.
I agree.
If you can see that, I don't know why that is, and I keep waiting for someone to explain that to me. But it's you have more of an opportunity to show all the nuances when it's a fictional character, and you kind of have permission to like look inside their head more than just if it's reported. And although reporting obviously can be beautiful and fully nuanced as well, but this, like, I can do anything or say anything with her.
Well, that's what I'm
saying.
Well, that's what I'm saying about the book is that, you know, like, look, if I didn't have a radio show and this book wasn't your publicist and my producer didn't get together, I'm probably not going to read All Grown Up because I'm going to think it's chick lit. And what I'm trying to get at in my conversation with you is it's not that at all. Now that I've read it, right, you know, because she's a full-blown, drawn character like Charles Dickens would draw her. I'm not saying you're as good as Charles Dickens, okay? But anyway.
Oh, I am. Damn it. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, you know, you really know her and you know how she thinks. Yeah. And that's why I have the question about the sex is because I'm thinking to myself as I'm reading it, which I wouldn't be doing it if she wasn't fully drawn out. So as I'm reading the book, I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe she doesn't have good sex because she doesn't know how to have good sex. Maybe she doesn't have these fantastic orgasms because she doesn't go out to see the baby. Maybe come and see the baby. You know, she doesn't.
I don't know.
Well,
I don't
she
think
doesn't,
really
though.
Problem.
Well, I'm the reader, and she didn't.
I mean, I just, I'm not, it's just not where the gaze is going in this book. The gaze is not about her fulfillment. The gaze is about her lack of fulfillment. But she has plenty of fulfillment also, even if it's not on screen there. I give you permission to imagine that she does have fun on occasion.
Okay, well, then I'll change.
But she, like, in my mind, I don't think, oh, she's not capable of it.
I'm allowed to think that, though.
Yeah, if you could think whatever you want to think. But in my mind, I don't think it's that. It's just that I'm sort of establishing like what I'm gonna think about this later after our conversation, because it just never really occurred to me at all. It was just like what I was focusing on at that moment in her life. I mean, I think I mentioned that she masturbates somewhere in the book.
You do.
Certainly, there's like a presumption that she does that. I mean, and like that's kind of satisfying to her. But I don't know. And I think she. I don't want to talk about all the specific sexual moments.
All right, well, forget about
give anything away.
Forget about the sex then. So if you go back to if you go to the fact that, you know, she uses when she's doing drugs, she does drugs. It's a very matter of fact usage of drugs. And it's a very matter of fact usage of alcohol. But at the same time, it's not generally considered normal. I wouldn't consider her consumption of either of those as normal behavior. But for Andrea, this is the person she is. And she needs help from time to time, as do lots of people. But she establishes herself in my mind as a specific kind of person. And it's like, I have an idea of who she is. And you've given so many clues that I pretty much know her. And I think the problem we're having in this conversation, I guess, would be like, maybe you don't. I don't know. How do you feel? Like, do you feel like, okay, I wrote the book. It's my child. I'm letting it out into the world. I ask this of all the authors.
Yeah.
You know, do I care what the reader thinks? Do I want the reader to work at this? Does it bother me that the reader thinks this Andrea is somebody different than I wrote? How do you feel about that stuff?
I think you just sort of, you know, I went through this experience with the Middlesteins, where half the people who read the book were like really hated Edie. So the, you know, for your listening audience, if they haven't read the book, it was about somebody who was morbidly obese. It was a matriarch of a family in the suburbs of Chicago. And her husband leaves her because he can't watch her kill herself with food anymore. And she's like in her 60s. And, you know, half of her family is like on his side and half of her family is on her side. And I would go on tour with it, and I would stand and, you know, I know how I felt about her and how I felt about it and what she was doing to herself and what her husband had done. And I stood in front of a room full of people, and people would just kind of yell at me. Like, half the people were mad at Edie and half the people were mad at Richard. And so I was, and as I said at the very beginning of this conversation, it's just a real Rorschach test when people, you know, can't, you know, people are just going to have different opinions about it. So I know what my intention was at the beginning of the book. And also, as I said earlier in this conversation, like, everybody's right and everybody's wrong. So it's not that it doesn't matter to me. I mean, I love that you are engaging with it. Like, that's awesome. It's not that it doesn't matter to me how you feel about her. It's just that I can't control where you come from on it. Like, what you're, you know, I don't know you, and I don't know, like, your history or how you would connect. So it's like, how could I possibly, like, control, like, an entire reading audience's mind?
Well, don't you think
you know? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I know exactly what you mean. But doesn't it feel
so
good
it
that you...
So it doesn't matter.
But doesn't it make you feel good, though, that someone cares enough to form the opinions?
Yeah. Oh, I'm not even, like, no, this is really a good conversation. I hope you don't think that I don't...
No, not at all. No.
I mean, but it's, I can't, I might, you know, what you want as an author is for it to feel like this, like you want it to feel like people are excited about it and want to talk about it and want to know and have answers and, you know, ask you for answers. But at the same time, you just have to let it be its own thing. I don't, you know, this is just the beginning of the conversation for me. You want people to have a conversation. You want to be a part of the conversation as a writer. So I hope that people will.
I think they will.
You know, I only slightly fear that people will think that it is chick lit only because, because I don't think there's anything wrong with chick lit, but that is a very specific audience. And I don't think that audience might like this, but I hate when my fear is that people go into a book expecting one thing and then they get something other and then they're really disappointed by it. And I don't want to disappoint anyone. Like, I want them to get that this is like a literary work and, it's, you know, it's a feminist work. It is about women, but you know, there's a strong female energy to the book. In fact, most of the chapters are named after women. but it is also about being a human being. And I would be delighted if men read the book, although I understand that, you know, if the worst thing that happens is like a bunch of women read it, then that's wonderful and a blessing. But it would be great if men would read it too. And I have had success with men reading my books in the past, so I think that we'll be okay.
What do you think of the cover?
Yeah. I love the cover.
I like it too.
It's really fun. It was kind of, it was actually the UK cover first, because they hadn't quite sorted out how they wanted the US cover to go. And the UK cover is slightly different, where she's more female looking in the UK cover. And in this, I like that she's a little bit more androgynous.
Yeah.
But it feels, I look at that cover and I think, for sure, that she's kind of hungover. and I like the Empire State Building and her glasses, because it feels like she's giving the middle finger in some way. And so it feels a little, hopefully feels a little edgier. People will get that it's a little edgier.
Well, plus after you read it and you realize, you know, the Empire State Building, it's just like her, that lens is her apartment, you know?
Mm.
And that's a really good touch too. Yeah, I like
it. You did a good job. of reading it.
Well, it's the cover. Obviously, you know, you get to vet the cover, sometimes you don't, but the cover is extremely important. I mean, I own a bookstore and people can tell me 1,000 times you can't judge a book by its cover, but every single person who comes in my store does. And that's how a book becomes chick lit. And what's good about this cover is it doesn't have, especially the androgynous thing you're talking about, it doesn't have that girly type feel that a guy's not going to pick it up and buy it or be ashamed to be reading it on an airplane or something. You know what I mean?
It's definitely like a very stylish cover, and it's got a really specific point of view, and it's got a lot of, it's just got a lot of energy to it. And it feels like the most appropriate cover that I've had yet for any of my books. And I just got the hardcover version in my house, and it looks good on a shelf. It looks good on a table. I think it's going to look great in airports. My dream is that somebody, because I've had a bunch of people who've read it on airplanes and then sort of like were sobbing at the end of the book. Again, we don't want to give anything away. But and I'm like, my dream is like somebody buys it at, you know, JFK and then flies to, I don't know where, to Los Angeles or somewhere else. And they just read it. Like, you could read it in over the course of, like, a flight, you know, that long of a flight, like a 6-hour flight or something like that.
Easily.
And then they just sort of, like, have that experience during that ride.
Yeah.
I
read it in one. I read it in one sitting. I think I think it's definitely a book you read in one sitting. I would say for sure. And
that's how I love to read books.
Me too.
That's why I wrote it, because I just wanted to be like really, when I read books, I just want to sit there and I just want to be consumed, you know, and I want to shut off the world around me and be one with the book. That's like the gift of a book.
It used to be great for me because, you know, when I was younger, I could, you know, start reading at 9 o'clock at night and finish the book at 4 o'clock in the morning and get up at 7 and I'd be fine. But now writers irritate me if they write a really good book, because if I start it and read it all night, I'm totally wasted the next day. Can't do anything. But
book hangover.
Yeah. but this was a pleasure.
This is great.
So thank you so much for coming by today. I really enjoy talking to you about it. And I was semi unsure about it, and I just was very, really overwhelmed with how good it was and what a character she is. And like I said, how she'll stay with me for, you know, as long as I'm around. So.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Sure. We were talking with Jamie Attenborough about her book, All Grown Up, which is a story of Andrea, who, as you've just heard a lot about, is an interesting character who can't seem to grow up. And the book talks about why that is and whether or not it's important that she does in the first place. So anyway, it was a really good book. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did, because it is kind of like what you would normally think of as a chick lit kind of book. But it's so well drawn that it's a good read for anybody. And it'll be on our front table at the bookstore. So continue to join us every week. The next one, we have a whole bunch of upcoming guests. This next one, the one that's coming up next, is this guy, Ian Robertson. He's a neuroscientist, clinical psychologist, and he wrote a book that, you know, normally I would think is like a self-help book called The Stress Test, How Pressure Can Make You Stronger and Sharper. But it's not really like what the title says. It's not like how to change your life. It's about how the brain and the mind, the duality of the two of them, work together, and how, like, things like in the old days, electroconvulsive therapy, electroshock therapy, and drugs versus, you know, like a talking cure kind of behavioral analysis of somebody were considered two different things. And what he does is meld the two together and talks about how anxiety, stress, in moderate levels actually are beneficial and can actually enhance the brain's performance, the mind's performance, and your ability to, I guess, move through life in a satisfactory way. You know, overwhelming senses of stress, like being a refugee or something like that, no. But if you have to give a presentation at a corporation and you're nervous and you're in the wings waiting to be called out and you're perspiring and you're thinking, what if I screw up and that kind of thing, he says that kind of stress is really beneficial. All you have to do to make it beneficial is say to yourself, rather than you're in an adreno fight or flight situation and you're ready to run out the door of the convention center, you just say, I'm excited, because that's what it is. You're excited. Everything's firing at once. You're excited, and just make it, you're excited to be doing this, not that you're afraid or stressed or anxious about it or worried about the outcome, that you're simply excited about going ahead and going through with it. So it was a really interesting book, and it wasn't, again, you know, sometimes I come to these books with preconceived notions, like I did with All Grown Up, and like I did with a book that's self-help, because I'm not going to read self-help books. But it wasn't that at all, and I think it's a really good book, and I think it'll be a really good discussion. So anyway, thanks as always for joining us this week, and we expect you back here next week for another edition of The Avid Reader.